Welcome to Creating Sanctuary, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero I'm interviewing today is Scott Blaze. Scott is the CEO and president of the Global Sanctuary for Elephants, and he currently lives in the heart of Brazil on a 2,800-acre sanctuary with his wife, Kat. Welcome, Scott, and thank you for doing the work you do. I'm so happy you could join us.
Well, thank you, Yolanda. It's a pleasure to be here, and we're honored to participate, and it feels surreal to be introduced as a hero. We're ultimately just doing our part, but we're thrilled to be involved.
Great. Well, you're doing an important part. So I'm going to start with a quote that you have on your website. It's so beautiful, and it's by Jacques Cousteau, and he says, "For man cannot give wild animals freedom. They can only take it away." Can you talk about why you chose that quote and the importance of sanctuary as solutions in our changing world?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I hear that quote, and it truly does give me goosebumps because of what we've done to these animals in general. I mean, we're going to be speaking specifically about elephants today because that's where our expertise lies and where we've been lucky to play a role. But ultimately, it does apply to all animals that we've impacted negatively. And sometimes people have a view of sanctuary as this altruistic, perfect, you know, world. But it's not, because we've already taken those freedoms away and we can never return them back to that freedom. What we can do is do as much as possible to give them as much of their lives back as we can. But we can't replace that family. We can't replace those generations of family that they've been pulled from. All we can do is create a space where we can try to mimic, you know, again, as best we can, what their life should have been, and try to help them recover from those ailments, the sufferings, the trauma, the neglect, and give them as much as we can, but we can never return them back to what their life should have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because especially with elephants, they get ripped away from their families when they're babies, right? A lot of your elephants actually were born in the wild, correct?
The vast majority of captive elephants were all wild caught. Very few of them, I think the number is going to be less than 10% of elephants in captivity were captive born. So what that means is, indeed, all these animals, all these elephants, these thousands, and the estimate is between 15 and 20,000 captive elephants in the world, those are all captured from the wild, where mahouts go in with trained elephants, they corral, lasso, drag away these infants, and steal them from their families.
Oh, my goodness. So that quote is even more relevant. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Scott, tell us about your 30 years of working with elephants and the evolution of your sanctuaries, because you've done a few of them now, right? How did you start and where are you now?
It's been a long journey. It's been a fascinating and incredible journey as well. And in some ways, I say unfortunately, but also equally fortunately, I started on the dark side of the captive elephant world, working in a facility that used trained elephants for shows, for rides. I worked with various circuses and zoos, helped train elephants from infancy, stole them from their captive, one was captive born, and pulled them away from their mother so they could be sent off to life in a circus. So I've seen, kind of came into this looking at the worst of the worst that exists, and the worst of the brutality that exists, and started seeing that this is not right. This is not the life that they should have. And if this is indeed, like I was told, which is what is necessary for elephants to live in captivity and not be euthanized because this is what prevents them from becoming rogue and wild, if this was indeed true, then this shouldn't be happening at all. And that's what started kind of the journey towards finding a solution, finding an alternative, because this just simply wasn't right. That journey took various evolutions. You know, it was trying to establish ourselves with somebody that had a facility such as a zoo that wanted to do something more expansive. The whole impetus of the goal was to try to give elephants their life, or a little bit more of their life, which is more space, more autonomy, more freedom. And various things didn't work out that we tried. So we ended up, my partner and I, Carol Buckley, decided to, I guess, take the plunge and do it on our own. And the impetus for that was actually the elephant, there's a movie that came out recently called Pike Elephant Outlaw, a circus elephant that killed a trainer in Honolulu and then was gunned down on the streets in a really dramatic and horrible fashion. And when we saw that is when we said, no, we just have to do this. We know something needs to change. Let's just do it. And we put an offer on 100 acres in Tennessee. And from there, just kind of evolved quite rapidly. And people started coming out of the woodwork to help. And we started bringing elephants onto those 100 acres, not knowing what to expect. When you gave elephants freedom, are they going to become rogue and wild, like our colleagues and mentors said? Or are they going to transform into something unexpected? And that's exactly what happened. It was completely unexpected, the transformations that we saw, and they were profound in every way. These elephants that some were as dramatic as being listed as autistic, a killer, antisocial, actually became one of the mentors, one of the leaders, one of the most empathetic and compassionate and caring individuals that we had. And time after time after time, we started seeing these evolutions and transformations that just left us in awe of what has been suppressed and what they can recover from. And that recovery and profound recovery not only was astounding to define who these individuals are and who the resilience of the species, but also the depth of damage that we actually caused by captivity, because we saw this layer after layer after layer of evolution. And again, that's kind of what drove us to continue and really devoted us, caused us to become more devoted to these lives and doing as much as we can for as many as we can.
That's incredible. So interesting. You know, this series is about sanctuaries of all different kinds. And I just spoke with the person who does rescues for cats. And she said the same thing about cats, these cats that seem vicious and will attack you if you approach their cage suddenly become the most docile and wonderful pets when they're in the right environment. So you're saying the elephants do the same thing?
On a profound level. And I'm really good at taking a 30-minute talk and turning it into 3 hours, which you don't have the flexibility to do. But it's so easy when you start getting into the complexities and this just the magnificence of these individuals, when you see just these transformations that do nothing except leave you completely in awe of the resilience of these individuals, not only defining who they are as a species, but, you know, as they rediscover what it is to be an individual, a being with importance, a being that is special not only to themselves, but special to those around them, and important to those around them. And you see this, the responsibility they can take on for one another, the responsibility that they have for their own decisions. And when you give individuals, like especially elephants that are so pensive, you see them ponder their direct actions. And one of the most fascinating things for me, from an intellectual perspective, is when you start seeing elephants take responsibility for their direct actions. A lot of times these individuals that have been in captivity and traumatized, they will just lash out or they'll do something and they seem to blame everything else for that emotion. And there comes a time in most of these elephants' lives in sanctuary where you see them stop. You know, initially when they're there, sometimes they do lash out, sometimes they do break things, but you see this pondering that occurs where they just stop and say, wait a minute, I have a choice. I don't have to be that individual. I can actually change what it is that I'm doing, and I can influence my own happiness. And they will make decisions to go a separate direction, to go a separate path. Sometimes that is to go decide to be social, and sometimes that is decide to go be on their own. And one of the most critical factors of sanctuary for us with captive elephants, it's not just the incredible dynamic space. It's helping them find the trust and comfort to explore who they are, and that who they are is wonderful, whether that's the elephant that is lashing out, that's aggressive, or whether it's the elephant that has now been pensive and trying to choose a different path. They are embraced and honored for each one of those facets of who that individual is, and allows them the space just to explore who they are more, to explore and be at peace that doesn't matter what they do, it's not wrong because it's all part of the journey. And when you see these processes occur, it's astounding. It's remarkable. And now that we're here in Brazil, you know, we only have, you know, our first two elephants here in the sanctuary in Brazil, Maya and Gita. And to overly simplify this, but to put it in perspective for some folks, Maya had been aggressive to Gita for years, brutally aggressive, pinning her down, pushing her, shoving her, causing physical harm to Gita. And for this reason, for the last 6 years of their life before coming here, they were chained separate from one another, both isolated on chains, and could only touch trunks underneath this hot wire fence. Within 12 hours of being here, there just seemed to be this complete metamorphosis that happened seemingly overnight. And Gita actually became a little bit stronger. She became a little bit bigger presence. And Maya said, oh, I actually see you for you. And Gita was no longer the scapegoat for Maya's actions. And Maya started taking responsibility almost right away. And from that point forward, we never saw anything that was overt. There was sometimes a little bit of a dominance struggle as Maya was being dominant for food or being a little bit pushy. As Maya was going through one of her personal struggles at the time, she may kind of take that out on Gita a little bit, but not overt aggression, just a little bit of displacement. And then Gita had the opportunity to say, you know what, I don't want to be a part of this. I have the flexibility to walk away. And she would just go to the other side of the area. And Maya would be left with saying, oh, actually, I think I caused that. You know, we're projecting these thoughts, of course, but you see this pensiveness that goes on, this analysis that goes on in their heads, where they just stop and ponder and realize that this is actually their responsibility and that they have the ability to shift this. And when Maya and Gita are remarkable, now they're sleeping over top one another, they're caressing each other all the time, they're protecting each other, they're looking after each other. Complete shift in less than a year with just these, you know, all we're doing is providing this spacious sanctuary that offers them the peace, freedom, and comfort to explore who they really are.
That is such a beautiful story. How come we don't know more about that? That's crazy. I've never heard that there's that kind of an emotional evolution in elephants. I mean, we hear that kind of thing about people, but I guess we've never thought about how similar the psychology can be with elephants.
It saddens me to say that we don't have an answer or why we haven't, because we have shortchanged most animals in our world, most species in the world. I think we've shortchanged ourselves in many ways. You know, we don't understand our own resilience. We don't understand what we can really tolerate and put up with and what we can forgive and let go of. You know, I think our society doesn't really encourage that anymore. And the fact that we don't do that to ourselves makes it impossible for us to really do that for other individuals as a general in our society. But I think that's starting to change. You know, that's, you know, look at what you're doing right now. It's profiling these wonderful folks that are trying to change the world and trying to change these lives to make them a little bit better. We're starting to see these opportunities and see have these opportunities to share these stories, just like what we're doing here today. But with elephants, one of the things that we see is the sterility of the captive space, and that sterility from the psychological sterility, the emotional sterility, the physical sterility, that they don't have any place to really move in these typical captive locations in zoos and those circuses. These spaces limit the elephants from being who they are. So as much as that sterilizes the individual, it's also sterilizing the observer. So those that are going to the zoo, even the keepers and caregivers that have worked with the elephants for years, their minds and hearts are also sterilized to who these elephants truly are, because they can't see that, because the elephants can't be who they truly are in that sterile environment. So now that we're giving these elephants this opportunity and kind of always pushing the horizon, pushing the limits of what they can endure, what space is actually required for them, we can start seeing this metamorphosis. We start seeing this transformation of the individuals that allow us, exactly what you're saying right now, allow us to see and learn more about these individuals and about their resilience and the emotional connections to one another, to themselves, to the world and each other. Just the depth of understanding they have that comes out of nowhere it's intriguing and awe-inspiring.
That is so beautiful. So you started with the 100 acres in Tennessee, and what was the evolution and what was the migration then to Brazil about, and why did you choose Brazil?
Interesting migration in Tennessee. When we started the sanctuary in Tennessee, again, it was 100 acres, and that was twofold. One, it's what we could afford. And two, we thought it was enormous. No one had given elephants space like this before. No one had given elephants more than a couple of acres. And again, the theories from our colleagues were always, you give elephants too much space, they're going to become rogue and wild and, you know, want to kill everything and anyone around them. The exact opposite is true. They become more compassionate, empathetic, more pensive, more peaceful, more cooperative. And when we, in that 100 acres, as the elephants started to evolve very quickly, the first couple of elephants, we said, whoa, you know, 100 acres is still quite small. And so we doubled our space and again thought this was amazing. And then very quickly, within 6 months or a year, it's like, this is still really small. Because it's not about how much space an elephant needs for forage like we measure with most livestock. Because people are trying to maximize the number of animals they can keep in a small area. This is about how much space they need and the diversity of space they need for the psychological stimulation. And that psychological stimulation is in great part that allows the transformation to occur. Enough space where they can get lost in their own world, lost within their own thoughts, without a bunch of outside stimuli. The space to seek their own solitude if they want to step away from the herd, and then the choice, the autonomy to come back and join the others when they're ready also. So the more space they have, the more flexibility, the more opportunity they have for this type of exploration of life. We eventually expanded into nearly 2,700 acres that was divided into three different locations, one for quarantine, one for a group of Asian elephants, and then another section for a group of African elephants. And within, we expanded on that space. We moved eight elephants that had been there for a while, anywhere from 1.5 years up to 10 years in this group, maybe 15 years, into the 2,200 acres. And within the first year, they had explored 1,800 of that 2,200. So mm-hmm. the vast majority of it. And they're going up and down all these hills and these valleys and just seemingly getting lost in their own world. And it was a beautiful thing to see and beautiful thing to observe. And that, again, helped us to define what it really means to these individuals, what is sanctuary, the importance of sanctuary. And it's ultimately through a lot of these stories, these transformations in the recovery, that has helped to influence the public pressure to change what we're doing with captive elephants, to take elephants off the circus, to end the abuse, to transform zoos, to terminate elephants living alone, and to move them into herd environments. And these social changes, the social awareness that is happening, is driving a global shift. Unfortunately, there is a repercussion in that, and that we don't have enough solutions. So we see all these progressive actions, you know, ban performing elephants, take them out of circus, close the zoo, but then what is the solution? Where are they going to go? Without right. the solution, this doesn't serve any purpose. It is definitely putting the cart before the horse. And so now we were invited by Elephant Voices, a phenomenal organization that does a lot, led by Joyce Poole and Petter Granley. We were invited by Elephant Voices, who had been working here in South America with some, in Brazil, with some Brazilians to try to push legislation forward to ban performing animals in Brazil. And secondary to that, or associated with that, was what is that solution? How feasible is it to develop a sanctuary in Brazil? Is there a need? Is it cost effective? You know, what are the steps included? And that's where we got involved in 2013. And we started, we moved away from the sanctuary in Tennessee to start a new organization called Global Sanctuary for Elephants that is dedicated specifically to developing sanctuaries internationally to provide those solutions that are much needed around the globe. And the primary reason for Brazil is because that's where the effort had started that we were asked to get involved with. 35 of the 50 elephants in South America are in Brazil. Brazil is already having active legislation to ban performing animals. When we visited in 2013, three of the four zoos that we visited said, please take our elephants. We can't provide them for them. And so we see this shift that is, geez, it's growing like wildfire across South America to transform the lives and, of these captive elephants and transform zoos and put an end to the captivity as we know it.
That's amazing. So I was going to ask you about that because it seems like South America is even ahead of the U.S. in terms of humane legislation. Is that true? And what can we learn from that?
It is definitely true. We are astounded with what's happening here in South America. And, you know, as an example, right now there are three zoos in Argentina that are transforming away from the typical zoo model into a biopark, eco-park model, which is basically giving fewer animals more space. Some of them are going so far as to rehoming every animal they possibly can, whether it be indigenous or exotic, bringing them to sanctuaries, sending them to other to more spacious, more holistic environments. And then they will serve as rehabilitation facility and release for injured indigenous wildlife. So serving a purpose to the community because of the global issue of our growing population and the impact that's having on wildlife around the world. So these zoos can focus on helping their communities this way and the animals in their backyard while giving these animals that can go somewhere else, that can have a better life, a better opportunity. And this is happening almost seamlessly, it seems like. But we know there's been a lot of groundwork. There's been some groups. One of those is Foundation Friends Weber, who have been working to help bring this idea of transformation.
Could you repeat the foundation name?
So Foundation Friends Weber has been doing a lot of work.
Friends Weber?
Foundation Franz Weber. Yes, they are a Swiss foundation.
Okay.
And they're located, they do a lot of work in various parts of the world. They do a lot of work in South America. They are, they do a lot of political lobbying to try to influence progressive legislation. They've worked in several zoos to try to work on these transformations, again, to try to shift the model, shift the norm away from what we know is damaging and create a solution that and serve a bigger purpose.
So that the zoos actually become more of a sanctuary and even for more local wildlife than a place to present foreign and exotic animals to city people.
Exactly. And ultimately, in doing so, they're creating a more dynamic and comprehensive environment for the viewer, too, because the viewer certainly has learned the direct impact that they are having, that their communities are having on the wildlife in their backyard. And that's one of the things that we've been intrigued with Brazil when we talk about the devastation that's happening with, for instance, the land encroachment in Africa and Asia, you know, more specifically in many parts of Asia, where these populations are being isolated, populations of elephants are being isolated from one another. And we'll get a response from Brazilians like, that's tragic. How can they possibly do that? And then we'll say, but what are we doing in the Amazon? Exactly the same thing here. You know, the state that we're in here in Brazil is one of those that has been all over the world, one of those maps that have been shown all over the world of the constant encroachment into the Amazon forest and devastation of the Amazon forest. Where if you look back at the Google Maps over a series of, you know, the last 10 or 20 years, 40% of the state has been destroyed. Beautiful, beautiful parts of the state. But we don't always see the direct impact we're having in our backyard. We see what others are doing because it's easier to kind of point the finger, but it's not always easy to look inward and see what our direct impact is. So when these zoos are helping the indigenous animals from their community, it allows the visitor to the zoo to then realize that the reason why these animals are here is because they were maimed by snares or poisoned or displaced or injured because of the growth of our society. And that is a direct impact that we're having. And it creates a little bit more of a conscious living, a conscious awareness to being conscious about our direct actions. So it's really intriguing and multiple-fold. It's helping, you know, rehome the animals that have suffered in those small captive spaces. It's providing a solution to the injured, traumatized, displaced animals that are in the backyard of the zoo, or in the backyard of the community. And it's opening up the eyes of the patrons to the impact that we have had and the positive impact that we can have in the future if we change what we're doing.
That is a wonderful example of progress and evolution that zoos can go through. On your website, you have a list of ways in which we can all help, and it seems like people could actually ask that of their zoos as well. Can you talk about some other ways that people can get involved and actually help the situation with elephants and with other forms of wildlife?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think this kind of ties back into the introduction again, going back to, you know, you're introducing 21 heroes, but it's never just the 21. It's the voice of hundreds of thousands that are making these changes. We get the glory job of being able to do this. We get to help elephants recover. We get to see these remarkable transformations and live this life every day that is just astounding. But we're one piece of that puzzle. And it is our society. It is each individual that just needs to do what they can. You know, if you set out to change the world, it's not going to happen. If you set out to have the most positive impact that you can have, it's astounding what can evolve out of that. And that's what we encourage people to do, is just take the first step to any positive action, whether it be via voice for the animals, be a voice just to increase awareness, to open up minds and hearts in whatever way possible. Use the stories that are being shared through our Facebook posts, through our website. Use the stories of all these individuals, all these organizations that you're profiling, to open up hearts and minds to a deeper level of who these animals are, whichever the species is. Make a donation. Many people here in Brazil and South America, one of the conflicts that we have is people think that the only dollar that matters is when you can make a $10,000 donation. But the reality is most of these organizations are built on $5 and $10 and $20 donations. So it doesn't take, you know, millions of dollars to make a positive difference. It doesn't take changing the world to make a difference. It takes positive action by each individual in whatever capacity that is, whether it be just being a voice, whether it be donating $20, or somebody wants to donate $20,000, that helps too. But it's just taking a positive step forward and getting involved in whichever way. To answer specifically about what people can do with their zoos, it's just opening up dialogue and not being an adversary to the zoo is, have you thought about this as a solution? You know, I've learned about the ways that we can do more for our elephants that are in our community, in our zoo, and is there a way that we can help, you know, impact these elephants in a positive way? And then also that would allow us to help other animals in this capacity. You know, by moving the elephants out, it's going to give more space to some of the other individuals that they need to care for and into the species. So there's lots of ways to approach it. Never be afraid of exploring new ideas. Ultimately, it's new ideas that change the world. So even if it seems foreign and obscure and impossible, I don't know there is a such thing. So just don't be afraid to be a new voice, a new share whatever heart, whatever your heart desires.
So back to the elephants, you mentioned that there are about 50 captive elephants in all of South America. Are you eventually hoping to get all of those 50 onto your sanctuary?
That would be ideal. For the elephants, that would be fabulous. Ultimately, again, you know, trying to change the world and not being able to do as much as you really want, our goal is to help as many elephants as we can, either directly here at the sanctuary. And sometimes that is, it's impossible to get an elephant to the sanctuary. We have that case right now with Palooza. We are doing everything we can to get this elephant to our to the sanctuary. We're waiting for the final step of her approval for the international transport importation permits for her to come because she's coming from Argentina. But in the meantime, she is ailing. She is really suffering. So we're trying to do as much as we can for her where she is until which time we're able to get the permission to move here, which we're trying to move forward as quickly as possible. But ultimately, if she ends up tragically not being able to come here because either she becomes too weak or if worst case scenario, she passes away before that opportunity comes, we still are playing a role in her life, trying to improve her life however we can. And that's what our ultimate objective is. If that means that all 50 elephants from South America come to live at the sanctuary, that would be a dream. That would be glorious. But the reality is that our primary objective is to help as many as we can, however we can.
Mm-hmm. And then I think it was when we spoke before, you mentioned something about getting a sanctuary like this on all continents. Is that what you're ultimately striving for with Global Elephants?
Again, our goal is to do as much as we can, whatever that is. You know, ultimately, we need sanctuaries, many, many more sanctuaries, because as we said, as I said earlier, their estimates are 15 to 20,000 captive elephants around the world. The vast majority of those are in various countries in Southeast Asia. There are several hundred elephants in Europe. There are 300 elephants in North America. Of all of these elephants, that are captive elephants around the globe, fewer than 150, maybe 170 have ever stepped foot into a true sanctuary. This number is too small. We need more sanctuaries because more elephants need alternatives. And the more our society understands, the greater the need will become because the society is going to be pushing faster. This is like we're seeing in South America. Right now we have 11 elephants essentially waiting for us to build, and we can't build fast enough to take them all. So we're building as quickly as possible. But that need is going to become exponentially greater. And so ultimately our goal is to help sanctuaries get established wherever there is a need as expeditiously as possible because the need for these elephants to have an alternative, a solution, is increasing exponentially.
Good news and bad news combined.
It's an interesting dilemma, especially for us, you know, with us living in Brazil and seeing this every day. It's an interesting dilemma, especially compared to what we've seen in the United States, where sometimes there's battles for years to get elephants out of these bad situations. And we have kind of the opposite problem is they're battling to get them here as quickly as possible. We actually have two zoos that are joking with each other. It's like, no, our elephant will be first. And this is unheard of in North America. But these zoos are saying, no, we recognize that we're not doing right by these animals and we need to change. So it's a really interesting dilemma to have this many knocking on our door. It's also a little daunting because we have so many that are just waiting for us. And ultimately for our work in Brazil, it's just a matter of finances. You know, the faster money comes, it means the faster we can build and the faster the elephants can have their sanctuary.
That sounds wonderful and actually gives me a lot of hope. So I want to encourage our listeners to support faster building of the sanctuary because the elephants are ready to come.
That's a great idea. You know, it's a simple formula. It really is not that complex. And it's, again, just everyone doing their part. And as an example of this, one of the elephants named Ramba, in Chile, one of the next ones to come, she's been waiting 5 years to arrive to a sanctuary. We're almost almost on the cusp of getting here, but we had more than, I think, 150,000 people signed a petition for her. And if each one of those not only signed but donated $1, that would almost pay for all of her transport costs that are needed, because it's a huge transport, because she has to come over the Andes and has to come by flight. So it's a lot more expensive than others. But not only sign the petition, just donate $1. That adds up, and it makes a substantial difference for what we can do for these lives. And as we already talked about, once they step foot on the property, once they step foot in the sanctuary, everything changes for these individuals in ways that it's almost impossible to fathom and impossible to fully convey.
Thank you for giving us that ray of hope, and I hope we all can support you as much as possible to get that elephant there, and all of them there, actually. Scott Blaze, thank you so much for your time. I know logistically this was a little bit tricky. You're in the heart of Brazil doing your important work, and I really appreciate you taking the time. And I also want to thank our listeners and encourage them to go to your website at globalelephants.org. It's so informative and beautiful.
I really appreciate the opportunity to be involved with this. It's an honor to be here, like I said before. And please, you know, any questions, anytime we can converse more, please let us know.
The honor is mine. You've been listening to Creating Sanctuary for Animals, and I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and I look forward to talking to you all again soon. Thank you, and bye-bye.